Hello, I'm Kerry Lonergan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. It's brought to you by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health. Today's guest holds the reins of one of Australia's biggest beef businesses, Consolidated Pastoral Company. Properties over more than 3 million hectares and around about 300,000 head. Welcome, Troy Setter. Troy, welcome to the grill.
Thank you.
You're on the grill, and I'm betting you like your steak or your beef medium rare, and you like control of the barbecue. Is that right?
Absolutely. Medium rare. I like the barbecue hot and organized, and the steak very well salted before it goes on.
And your favorite cut?
The ribeye.
Ribeye. Why wouldn't you like that? Heavens. Troy, your childhood, you come from the land?
I've come from a small place. My parents had a small farm in New South Wales, and that was a great upbringing.
Did you go away to school, or were you schooled locally? What was your?
I went away to high school in Sydney. Went to Hurlston Agricultural High School, so there was lots of farming and agriculture across a variety of industries. So it was a great experience, and boarded there for a few years.
And a very famous school as well. Now, did you always want a career in the beef industry?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to be in agriculture, and particularly beef. I used to show a lot of cattle and muck around with a few cattle when I was younger. So something in agriculture, and particularly beef, was what I was looking for.
Did you have a sort of gap year as a jackaroo, or did you go straight to uni?
When I finished school, I went and worked for Twynham Pastoral back when Twynham had the properties all over New South Wales and in a variety of industries, from beef and sheep and cotton and lots of cropping and horticulture. And so I did that for a year on five different Twynham places. And then the next 4 years I did both working for Twynham and university as part of their cadetship program. So I'd do work in, across all the different properties and also in the office in Sydney, the marketing team and university at the same time.
That's a pretty broad experience. You ended up with an ag science degree.
Yeah, completed rural science from the University of New England in Armidale.
Where did you aim from there?
I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was fortunate enough to win a place on the Australian Collegiate Meat Judging Team and the Shorthorn Youth Scholarship in 2000. So I spent a fair bit of time in 2000 in the US, Japan, Korea, Canada and Scotland, the UK, looking at the beef industry and red meat industries and doing a lot of traveling around farms and feedlots and just working, and went to about 30-something states in the US and did a little bit of time at universities, but a lot of time just working on farms or feedlots or abattoirs and judging meat, and came back to Australia and Twynham said to me, I was fortunate enough, they said, we've got a feedlot at Delunga at Gunnee that was closed. They said, you need to sell it. And so we did the work on it, got it, did some assessment, but the only way we're going to sell this is if we get it going. No one's going to pay full price for a closed feedlot. So put a program together, got the feedlot going and got some customers, and there was a good sized station with it as well. And so that was, realised that it was quite profitable. Or made it profitable. So they decided not to sell it. And that was my first job out of uni. So that was pretty cool.
So that's a pretty broad experience. That meat judging, KP, is a pretty common career gig for a lot of leaders in the beef industry at present. So you ended up then at AACo after a while?
Yeah, I went from Twynham over to the joint venture between Elders and Taiwan Sugar and Taiwan Pineapple at Talara, and then went up and ran North Australian Cattle Company and the shipping that Elders had out of Northern Australia and some of their other live ex markets, and then ended up at AACo for a few years as chief operating officer, and then over to CPC about 5 years ago.
So when you were with AACo, it's a big company and it's got a lot of good properties. Did you get any feeling that it should have been more successful than it has been?
Yeah, look, I started AACo in 2010, which we were really, I suppose the first year or two of my job was just helping recover from the 2008-09 drought. AACo had had a huge drought on the Barkly and up in the Gulf, and then a flood in the Gulf that had taken out about 13 or 14,000 cattle, and really smashed by drought and low cattle prices. So the first couple of years was really just getting, you know, the team realigned and working on restocking the properties and developing them and recovering from drought and flood, which seems to unfortunately happen again for them on a bigger scale. Diversifying a few markets, and that was a good time.
Your trip to CPC, you went from a rather complex market arrangement, I suspect, into CPC, which, just from my point of view, it has the most simple business model: breed those Bos Indicus cattle and put them on a boat. Is that a fair analysis? I know it's a bit more complex than that, but is that the basis of it?
At CPC, we've got two feedlots in Indonesia, and they take about 30,000 cattle a year of our own, and we buy about 30,000 northern cattle to those feedlots, and then we put about 30 to 40,000 cattle into the domestic market in Australia. So we've got, you know, quite a large Angus and Angus cross herd, and some Charolais and Wagyu genetics and Brangus in that herd, and then our northern herd does have a reasonable amount of Brahman in it, but we are putting, you know, quite a bit of Angus, and there was a lot of Charolais put into those herds to increase yield, and we're very strongly focused on increasing fertility at the moment, but also market flexibility. So a lot of our northern herd has got starting to get a fair bit of cross of other breeds into it to increase the fertility and then the productivity.
And I think you're pretty proud of that feedlot and the way it operates in Indonesia. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're very proud of the two feedlots in Indonesia and Sumatra. We established those with Greg Pankhurst and Dickie Adewoso over 20 years ago. And Dickie's still our partner in that business. There's roughly 600 people employed by those two feedlots, and there's 12,000 families rely on those two feedlots and the farming operation there. We do a bit of farming in Indonesia. We mapped the position that we held in the community a couple of years ago, and you know, between truck drivers and farmers and butchers and the team that works on the properties and things, there's about 12,000 families that rely on our two feedlots in Indonesia, and that's really important to us, and really makes me think about the decisions that we make. That sure, there's economics decisions, but there's big social responsibilities that we have with a business that has so many families relying on it.
12,000 families, that's fantastic. Golly. I didn't realise it was so big, but it's certainly, it must be greatly influential in that area.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting business to be in. And we've got a great team of people up there, you know, dedicated workforce, as well as, you know, new youth and energy coming through. And it's a really exciting team. They're really innovative and really committed. And, you know, I couldn't ask for a better team of people to be involved with in our Indonesian and our Australian businesses.
Let's talk about the recent operations at CPC. Can you give us a summary of the transition of ownership of CPC? What happened late last year?
Yeah, so late last year, we were coming to the back end of a sell down of CPC. And we completed a transaction where the Hands family office and Guy Hands, who also owns Terra Firma, purchased CPC, aligned with the management team. We were bought by Terra Firma through one of their investment funds in 2009 from the Packer family. And through that time, you know, there were some challenges with markets and droughts and operations. So we grew the business up to about 400,000 head of cattle. We sold down about a third of the operations through 2018-19, and then in 2020 did the buyout out of the fund. The fund needed to be closed because it was a time limited fund, and Guy and his family bought CPC, and we're really excited to be working with the Hands family office and the Terra Firma team to keep growing and developing CPC.
So how many properties are left now, Troy, and how many cattle would you have on board?
So we've got seven properties or groups of properties. Some of the properties are made up of a couple of stations. So there's about seven properties that we own and then a couple that we lease. So we've got just over 3.5 million hectares of land across the three northern states about 300,000 head of cattle on those properties, and then the two feedlots in Indonesia, and then there's a bit of farming and cropping in Australia and quite a bit of farming in Indonesia.
How impacted was CPC by that drought of 2019 on breeder numbers and calving? AAK last week claimed it had lifted calving rates last financial year by 47%. Did that figure surprise you, and would you be looking for something equal to that?
Look, it did surprise me a little bit. We were our operating expenses to the drought of 18-19 were up about $3 million. Most of that was adjustment and some additional feeding costs. We didn't really cut back our breeding herd at all. We put cattle on adjustment, and a couple of our properties in the true north had reasonable seasons. We also developed a lot of water and fencing and troughs to put boars down. We still had some country that we weren't using effectively, and that had some grass on it. We were pretty impacted on the barclay and in Western Queensland, but we worked through that, and our herd didn't decline. And then off the back of that drought, we, I suppose, really took a view on the cattle price that it would go up, because all states were impacted by drought and the herd had come down. No, none of us predicted that the cattle price would be what it is today, but we put a fair bit of thought into what does the future look like, what's the cost of restock, what's the cost of capital. Interest rates were coming down pretty well. And so we held all of our heifers the last 2 years and joined them, and we've actually been a seller of PDIC heifers and PDIC cows for the last sort of 6 months, and we will be for the next 6 or 7 months. So we're not in a bad position.
That's a good time to sell, especially PDIC heifers.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break now to hear a message from our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.
This podcast is brought to you by CompuDose, a proven way to maximise growth rates in grass-fed cattle. CompuDose allows you to target and achieve specifications for most major markets, including MSA grading and feedlots. Contact Elanco and find out how CompuDose can grow your beef operation. Results may vary depending on nutrition. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to On The Grill. You're listening to Troy Setter from the Consolidated Pastoral Company. Beef processing in Northern Australia has continued to face big challenges. Darwin's closed, and even the Kimberley beef plant will not be opening this year. Have you got any view about, is there any future across Northern Australia for a beef processing unit?
I think there is a future for beef processing in Northern Australia. However, it's tough this year because of the cattle price. But the cattle price in Northern Australia for cows is roughly the price for cows in Southern Australia. That said, those cows are lighter in Northern Australia on a carcass weight basis, so your cost per kilo of meat you've got to be really careful with. I think the challenge with some of the northern abattoirs has been procurement strategy, and it's just so important that you have quite a deep procurement strategy up there. If you want cattle spreads all year, you really need to go quite deep in procurement and work with producers. The live export industry does take slaughter cattle, but it takes a lot of store-conditioned cattle, and producers can be flexible with their marketing. But if you want fat, ill cattle in Northern Australia, particularly in the NT and WA, you've really got to be working closely with producers to schedule cattle for the plant. The other thing is just port logistics and the distance to market, or the distance to get product on the water, and there's pretty limited container trade out of places like Derby. Going to come back down to Broome, and then down to Perth and Fremantle, and Darwin's a bit erratic with chilled container trade. So it is tough, but I think it's possible. But I think those people that operate those facilities that'll be successful in Northern Australia are, you know, going to have to really be close to the operations up there.
Yes, I have the feeling that a lot of people feel that a boutique operation might have some chance of surviving up there rather than a big unit that they tried to build at Livingston.
Yeah, I think that'd be something that I'd, you know, I don't have an abattoir in Northern Australia, but it'd be something that I'd be, the way I'd be thinking about how I'd run one if I did.
Now, Indonesia, I would suggest the live trade to Indonesia must be pretty fragile at present, is it?
It's pretty tough. I think this year will be, you know, probably 350,000, 400,000 cattle instead of 500,000 to 600,000 head of cattle, maybe. It is pretty tough. $4.10 Darwin is the feeder steer price today, and that combined with some high commodity prices in Indonesia, you know, higher Aussie dollar and weaker IDR and a bit of a spike in fuel prices is making those terms of trade pretty tough to Indonesia. That said, though, there's patches in the market up there that have been relatively strong, and I think we just have to be a bit flexible. There's been some challenges with logistics with Indian buffalo into Indonesia. There's been a fair bit of cheap Aussie and Brazilian beef that's ended up there probably in the last 2 or 3 months. And I think with what's happening with global meat prices and decline in supply out of Brazil and out of Australia, that we might see the last of that for a little while, and that could help the feedlotters up there. I think one of the things that is challenging us a bit is the feed prices just aren't as cheap as what they were, you know, a couple of years ago.
And you also have government interference in the market, or at least attempts to curb meat prices in the market. That must make it more difficult for cattle importers and light feeders in Indonesia.
Yeah, it has. It's been a challenge with the price guidance and price caps that the government has placed in Indonesia, trying to have food available, and particularly beef, which is a real staple in Indonesian culture, for as many people as possible. That said, though, I'll give credit where it's due to the Indonesian government this year. They've really worked well with us to understand our cost of cattle, why the cattle price and why the meat price has gone up so much, and they've certainly allowed those prices to increase this year.
Is there any way Australia could help in that? Are you looking at changes possibly to genetics in response to live export customers' demands? Is that possible?
It's certainly possible. Look, as a company, we have a pretty strong composite breeding program, and there's no doubt. And you know, we run the numbers, you know, every month and on every animal and all crosses and breeds. And certainly for us, our composite cattle perform better. They have better ADG, better feed conversion, better gain, and that's been helpful. I think the infrastructure that you know Greg and Dickie and CPC put in over the years of, you know, quality pens where the cattle are cool and well looked after has been quite helpful for CPC. I think, you know, that really focusing on animal and team member and staff welfare has really helped us in the last 12 months deal with higher cattle prices.
You send those bigger cattle to Vietnam as well?
We do. We do send some bigger cattle to Vietnam. We also send bigger cattle to our feedlots in Indonesia. So we send, we probably send, you know, 750 cows a month to our own feedlots in Indonesia. All our cull bulls go there, and we certainly buy heavier cattle for the feedlots in Indonesia. But we do send some heavier and fatter cattle through exporters to customers in Vietnam.
Do we need China in the market? And is there anything you might suggest that we could do here locally to influence that market to look at Australia again or more?
Look, China is a massive market, and it's really a collection of markets is the way I look at it. There's, you know, very distinct differences in consumer preferences of meat types and cuts across China. It's, you know, the biggest consumer market for so many commodities. You know, we need to have a position and a strategy. It's really, you know, important that we try and have access to the markets in China. But we also need to be eyes wide open to some of the challenges of supply to those markets. There is absolutely political challenges that we're not immune from. But as a red meat industry, we've just got to play a straight bat through those, hope that we can, you know, and work closely with our customers. It's important just to work directly with the customers in those in China to work through issues and try and maintain market access. But we do need alternatives to other markets, and we need to maintain those alternatives. I think for us at CPC, we certainly had we had a couple of boning rooms and some meat processing in China, and in 2014-15 made the decision to close those facilities. It just wasn't the type of market and that we wanted to participate in, and I think that served us well. But you know, as Australians, we need to have market diversity, but you can't ignore China, whether you're supplying China or competing against another country that is supplying China. It has a huge impact on the global red meat price, and also so many of the commodities that we sell out of Australia.
We've got a lot to look forward to or play out in the coming years, I suspect, with China. But I'm just going to conclude today, Troy, by saying one word, and I'd like you to explain this to our listeners because I think it's something you could be justly proud of, and that is the word Dolly.
Thank you. Yeah, no, the Dolly's Dream Foundation is really important to me, but certainly important to lots and lots of people across Australia. And Kate and Tick lost their daughter Dolly a few years ago from online bullying and relentless bullying, and you know, there was lots of things that were at fault, but our role of raising awareness for both young people and parents and schools and teachers around the challenges and damaging nature of bullying and raising awareness is really, really important. And just been so blessed to have the support of, you know, so many people, particularly in rural and regional Australia.
Troy Setter, boss of CPC, great to talk with you today. Good luck in the future.
Thanks, Kerry. Thank you.
And thank you for joining me today. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan, and this is The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Beef Central and our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.